about this.
Our brains change.
Memory is an amazing.
What you think is in
our
there.
Our brains aren't
really
finished. They're not fully cooked yet.
You go with your heart. And you
don't have any idea why
we're
doing
so smart.
Most of the things that we're doing.
But here's the deal. You know, in many ways, we're waiting for psychology to come along and make it easier for us to learn.
Exactly.
Darn it.
He's Art Markman, and he's Bob Duke.
And she's Rebecca McEnroy.
And this is Two Guys on Your Head.
Today, learning styles.
What's happened recently is there's been a great deal of attention given to this idea that everybody has a learning style, that somehow some people say, well, I'm a visual learner. Well, I'm an auditory learner. I'm a kinesthetic learner, you know, whatever.
My style's sort of Art Deco.
Yeah, exactly. But it gets back to what we've been talking about our need to put things in categories, right? And we have yet another category. And it combines with our need to explain stuff when it doesn't work.
Yeah. Here's the thing that's important to understand. It's not that the way that you present information doesn't matter.
Right.
It does.
Right.
So what you get out of things when you see it is different than what you get when you hear it. So there are different types of information that are coming in through all of these different modalities we have and the coordination of those modalities. It's just that it does not seem to be the case that there are some people who do much better if you only present the information visually or auditorily or tactily. But rather, we should be giving everyone lots of different experiences with things.
So, exactly.
Because it's possible to say, oh, the learning style stuff doesn't matter, so everyone should just sit and listen to somebody talking.
Yeah.
No.
Wrong takeaway.
Right.
Yeah.
The right takeaway is we want to present things in this kind of multimodal, multidimensional way to everybody.
Exactly.
And if you begin to think about, well, what are the modalities doing? So, for example, written language makes people a little bit lazier in their memory processes because the information is still there.
Right.
So if you look at the habits that people develop when they're reading, they often read in a more cursory way, in part because they know if they miss something, they can go back. But you actually pay more careful attention to the meaning of spoken language because you can't go back.
Right.
And so the modalities have real differences associated with them that are interesting and important. It's just they're interesting and important to everybody.
And I mean, the language change that needs to be made, I think, is not have a goal that learning is easier, but that learning is more effective,
right.
Which is a different thing, right?
Yes.
I mean, if it's easy, well, then you're probably not learning much from it. Now,
right.
It doesn't mean it needs to be miserable. And that's a different thing, right? Because
yeah.
There's lots of things that we work really hard to learn, and the entire experience is exhilarating.
Right.
So it's not, we don't want to, you know, equate work and effort with misery, right? To say that I'm going to make this easy to learn
right.
is probably an impossibility.
My favorite, there's a guy named Bob Bjork at UCLA, and he has this concept of the desirable difficulty, in which he points out that a lot of learning happens when you have the right level of difficulty, where there's just the right amount of work that you have to do. But then he wrote this wonderful chapter in a book a while back in which he analyzed the factors that lead to high course evaluations for college faculty. So if you think about the education system, college faculty are generally evaluated in part by student evaluations at the end of a course. And if you look at what predicts the course evaluations, it's things like, does the professor speak well? And also even things like attractiveness influence course evaluations. And then what Bob Bjork did was to say, but and here are the things that influence student learning. Like the course was a little bit difficult, it was frustrating at times, you had to really grapple with things you didn't understand. And some of those factors are actually slightly negatively related to course evaluations.
Mm-hmm.
In the moment, the students feel like, you know, this wasn't completely fluent. I didn't feel completely comfortable the whole time. It must have been the professor's fault.
Sure.
And so at best, the course evaluations are unrelated to the factors that promote learning. And at worst, they're actually negatively related
yeah.
to the factors that promote.
Right. And I think one of the things that is unfortunate about us as human beings is that once we come to believe something, however that belief came about, we're very unhappy when somebody shakes our confidence in that thing. So, I mean, learning styles is a huge thing in schools and in other kind of training programs. And to say, you know, actually, it really doesn't matter. I mean, people don't like that.
There's actually remarkably little research on modality differences in performance. Most of the materials are presented in written form. And so you get a very small number of these studies that are done with other modalities that show a difference. And then you pump that up into, let's try this in different ways. And then there's money to be made.
Well, and anytime you have some small result or a hint of a result, well, you take that and then that gets cited and then somebody else cites that and then somebody else cites that citing that. And unfortunately, it is a little bit like a game of telephone. I'd like to think that in the sciences, including the social sciences, you know, we're very meticulous about things. But actually, we do tend to cite some stuff without going back to the original paper and saying, now, wait a minute, what did they actually do?
And there's another piece to this, which is really important, which is there's a bias in the literature, in the scientific literature, towards effects. Now, every once in a while, you get these results by chance. It just happens, but you publish this result anyhow. Now, what happens is other people think, wow, that's really cool, and they run it in their labs, and they don't get the effect. Well, it's much harder to get a study published if there's no difference between conditions, in part because there's lots of explanations for why you might fail to get an effect. So there's a bias against publishing these results that show no effect. And so if somebody gets an effect into the literature because they had a study that got a reliable difference, it can take years and years and years before people are able to run enough studies to show that actually this thing doesn't matter. And the learning styles piece of this is actually an important example of this, because these techniques were developed and there were lots of researchers who were having trouble actually getting these findings in laboratory studies. And they finally did a large scale study. I mean, the paper that came out on this was actually in a specific issue of a journal with a lot of authors on it. And it basically required a lot of people to get together and say, you know what, there just isn't any good evidence that these learning styles are having differences for particular people.
Next week, we'll talk about when, why, and how to end relationships with Dr. Art Markman and Dr. Bob Duke. You can subscribe to the podcast of Two Guys on Your Head on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, and leave us a review while you're there. It really helps us out. And also, don't miss Two Guys on Your Head on our next Views and Brews at the Cactus Cafe this Tuesday at 6, when we'll talk about the psychology of trust. Find more details on that at cactuscafe.org. I'm Rebecca McEnroy, and I produce Two Guys on Your Head at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas.